This is DW News live from Berlin. Tonight, Washington lays out its tough new line to rein in Iran.
No more wealth creation for Iranian kleptocrats. No more acceptance of missiles landing in Riyadh and the Golan Heights. No more cost-free expansions of Iranian power.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo adding that the U.S. will impose its toughest sanctions yet on Iran. Also coming up, Italy's populist coalition nominates Giuseppe Conte for prime minister, meaning that the country could finally see a new government sworn in. We'll bring you the latest from Rome. And Russia facing a new doping scandal with less than 4 weeks until the Soccer World Cup begins. German journalists have uncovered suspicious test results from Russian soccer squad members. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. Tonight, the United States is threatening to impose its toughest ever sanctions on Iran. That is unless Tehran ends its nuclear program and withdraws its forces from Syria. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo today laid down the ultimatum, signaling a new approach from Washington after it jettisoned the international nuclear deal with Iran 2 weeks ago.
The new U.S. Secretary of State sent a clear signal to the Middle East. Washington wants to use all means to limit Iran's power in the region and weaken its economy.
The sting of sanctions will be painful if the regime does not change its course from the unacceptable and unproductive path it has chosen to one that rejoins the League of Nations. These will indeed end up being the strongest sanctions in history when we are complete.
The U.S. aims to completely isolate Iran economically. It's threatening to fine European companies that continue doing business with Tehran. The Secretary of State used his speech to up the pressure on Washington's allies.
Anytime sanctions are put in place, countries have to give up economic activity. But everyone's going to have to participate in this.
The U.S. has tough conditions for a new nuclear deal. Iran must completely stop all uranium enrichment. The G20 Foreign Minister Summit is emblematic of the Iran conflict. Here, there is little sympathy for Washington's position.
Having a deal where Iran commits to not launching a nuclear weapons program increases security in Germany and in Europe. And as long as I do not know what would replace it and why the Iranians should now begin new negotiations, we will do everything we can to see that this deal holds.
As far as the White House is concerned, the deal is history, but its stance on Iran is creating a split between the U.S. and Europe.
Earlier, a senior policy advisor to Mike Pompeo at the U.S. State Department, Brian Hook, spoke to our Washington bureau chief, Alexander Fanon.
We have already seen some reactions from Iran, Iranian officials saying that your goal is a regime change in Iran. So is it your goal?
No, our goal in vis-a-vis Iran is for them to end their nuclear weapons program and end their nuclear program, which has the intent to become to achieve a nuclear weapon. We also want them to stop the terrorism and the violence across the Middle East. We want them to stop violating the human rights of their own people. And these are all reasonable demands. I think that we've become desensitized to a lot of what Iran has been doing over these last many decades. We've gotten used to it in some ways. And we need to change that paradigm. We really need to get Iran to join a more civilized sort of community of nations than it has been, we've seen over these last many years.
That was Brian Hook there, a senior policy advisor to U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, speaking earlier today with our Washington bureau chief, Alexander Van Namen. Well, tonight, Italy is edging closer to a new government 11 weeks after that inconclusive election. Today, the country's populist coalition nominated Giuseppe Conte to be prime minister. Now, Conte is a relative newcomer to Italian politics, and he is a compromise pick from two uncomfortable political bedfellows, the anti-establishment Five Star Movement and the far-right League.
This graffiti may depict a close relationship between Luigi Di Maio and Matteo Salvini, but they certainly weren't allies during the election campaign. Now the populist leaders of the far-right League and the Five Star Movement have asked President Sergio Mattarella to approve their new alliance.
Today we can say we are faced with a historic moment. I also say this to our international partners. Let us begin, then you will criticize, but at least let us begin first. This is perhaps an unexpected government, but it has been elected.
Nobody has anything to fear. Obviously, we want a government that puts national interests first and foremost, as we proposed to Italians during our election campaign. We will respect everybody, but we will put Italy in the center, Italians first.
The League from the North and the Five Star Movement from the South spent 2 weeks hammering out a program. It calls for the deportation of 500,000 asylum seekers. Costly campaign promises such as tax cuts, earlier retirement, and a basic income are to be paid for with more debt.
This contract is the heart of the government of change. I see many people concerned about the international and European context. They have nothing to fear. The contract is the will of the Italian people who want change.
Italy's European partners are alarmed. The Eurozone's third largest economy is already among the world's most indebted countries. But the coalition hopes a political novice, Giuseppe Conte, will ease the concerns of Italy's partners. The law professor has been proposed as prime minister. The two party leaders agreed on the unknown technocrat as a compromise for the top post. Now President Sergio Mattarella has to approve the new coalition's choice.
All right, let's bring in our very own Bernd Riegert. He is covering the story for us tonight in Rome. Good evening to you, Bernd. So who is this man, Giuseppe Conte, and what is it about him that means a far right and a far left party can agree on him to be their prime minister?
Politics in Italy work differently, and it's no surprise that a prime minister is chosen who is not a member of the coalition parties. It is not so unusual. That happened before, but this time it's very extreme because the populist parties are extreme, and Mr. Conte is very unknown to everybody here in Italy. He is a law professor and he's an expert of administrative law, but he never appeared publicly, he never held public office, but he is leaning towards the Cinque Stelle movement, and that may be the reason that he was chosen to lead this government. And both parties, both party leaders, Di Maio and Salvini, will hope to control him from behind, so to say. And it may be that both of them will be in the cabinet of this prime minister and he will be their puppet on a string.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a political, no name. It still remains to be seen whether or not he will be a puppet to one of those parties. And we know he has to get the approval of the Italian president. How likely is that?
That's quite likely that Sergio Mattarella, the president, will approve this choice because new prime minister will have a broad majority in both houses of parliament, and also 60% of all Italians, according to a new poll, are supporting this populist government, this new approach, this revolution, as Luigi Di Maio said. So Mattarella will go along with that, otherwise he would cause an institutional or governmental crisis, but he will not do that.
And we know that Five Star and the League, I mean, they've both been very critical of the European Union. So how is Brussels likely to respond to all of this?
Well, the populists have watered down their rhetoric a little bit, but of course Europe and the EU is very suspicious to see what now happens. What will they actually do? The contract of the coalition is a long list of wishes and also you can say, aggression against the EU because the government says they will no longer adhere to the rules of the European Union. They want new treaties in favor of Italy. And this, of course, cannot happen. France and Germany have already warned that Italy can destabilize the Eurozone. And everybody will watch how the markets will react. Italy is heavily indebted. 130% of its GDP is similar to the debt. So it's very, very difficult for an Italian government actually to spend so much money. And the EU will watch closely and will then say stop if it's necessary.
All right, Bernd Riegert in Rome tonight. Bernd, thank you very much. Here are some of the other stories now that are making headlines around the world. India has dispatched medical teams to the southern state of Kerala. It comes after the outbreak of a deadly virus. Officials say up to six people may have died from the illness, which is known as the Nipah virus. With no vaccine, it has a mortality rate of up to 75%. Authorities in Hawaii say the lava flowing from the Kilauea volcano is producing toxic clouds as it reaches the Pacific Ocean. Residents are being warned to stay away from the fumes, which are a dangerous mix of hydrochloric acid, steam, and extremely fine shards of glass. The lava haze, or laze as it's known, can cause lung damage and eye and skin irritation. Former U.S. President Barack Obama and his wife Michelle have signed a deal with the online streaming company Netflix. The company says under the multi-year agreement, the couple will produce films and series under the name Higher Ground Productions. Netflix has 125 million subscribers worldwide. Well, just weeks before the World Cup soccer tournament begins in Moscow, there are new accusations of Russian doping. German journalists have revealed evidence suggesting that Russian authorities covered up doping test results from soccer players in the country's World Cup squad. Now, the German investigative reporter, Hajo Zeppelt, uncovered a state-run doping program in Russian athletics. He says Russian soccer now has some questions to answer.
The Russian doping scandal may also extend to the national football team. Russian officials are suspected of covering up test results, making samples disappear, which had the potential to implicate footballers, some of whom have been selected for the host's World Cup squad. German TV channel ARD has obtained a list containing player names and code numbers of doping samples. The list is based on information from investigators and intelligence gathered from a 2014 raid on the Moscow Doping Control Board. In that raid, the World Anti-Doping Agency WADA seized samples with atypical test results that had not been investigated further by Russian authorities. Samples from players in the current World Cup squad were among them.
What we labeled the disappearing positive methodology, which was the lab's mechanism by which they falsely reported their results.
ARD says WADA also obtained a separate database with atypical test results from almost 100 Russian footballers. This information was also passed on to FIFA. Following a request for comment, FIFA said investigations are underway and they are hoping to report new developments in the coming weeks.
All right, German soccer now. And in the Bundesliga's relegation playoff, Holstein Kiel hosted Wolfsburg in the second leg on Monday night. The Wolves had a huge advantage after winning the first leg in Wolfsburg last week by a score of 3-1. Could Kiel beat the odds and win promotion to the top flight? Let's find out.
It was Wolfsburg who struck first. Joshua Guillevogie teeing up Yunus Mali. But Divock Origi was offside, as keeper Kenneth Kronholm rightly pointed out. And the video assistant referee agreed. Then it was Kiel's turn to put the ball in the net. David Kinsombi hitting the target, but it turned out the play had been blown dead. It stayed scoreless until the 75th minute when the Wolves finally made it 1-0. Robin Konecka heading in a Maximilian Arnold corner. Kiel seemed to answer in the 88th, but VAR ruled out the Rafael Tsikos goal for handball. One nil the final score. Wolfsburg win the playoff 4-1 on aggregate and stay in the top flight, while Kiel's fairy tale season comes to an end.
And speaking of fairy tales, Kensington Palace has released the first official photos of Britain's Prince Harry and Meghan Markle on their wedding day. The pictures show the couple appearing relaxed and happy alongside page boys, flower girls, and royal family members. The Queen granted Harry and Meghan the titles Duke and Duchess of Sussex as they married at Windsor Castle on Saturday. All right, you're up to date with DW News. For all of us in Berlin, thanks for the company. We'll be back at the top of the hour with more world news.